The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. This is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Derek always scares me with that laugh, man. That's just creepy. So hey, welcome back to the Devil's Advocate, the spring edition. Dr. Kelly Coughlin coming to you live from the College of Media and Communication, here with my media and communication compadre, Reggie Rutledge. He's back with us.
Hey, guys, what's up?
And from Political Science, Matthew Riley.
Always a pleasure.
And our other regulars might be back, but they're not exactly regulars today. You know why? Because they're not here. But that's okay. We'll have some fun. So, and thanks to Jasmine Moore behind the glass and a blast from the past, Lem Chung helping us out. He was here the first year, so appreciate it. Oh, wait, he's probably not supposed to be here, so don't pay any attention to that. I'm just kidding. All right. So welcome back. You guys may or may not be familiar with our show. It's a talk show where we kind of do what Ed Schultz and Rush Limbaugh do, except we do what both of them do on every show, which is we try to cover both sides of every issue, and we also try to have a little fun while we're doing it. So guys, welcome back. Anything happen over the break?
I mean, forgetting all about politics in the show was definitely on the big to-do list.
You never forget about politics.
Actually,
you skip the show.
Actually, politics never leaves my family because the news is always on 24/7 at my home. So it's just constant stream of like media and whatnot. So
doesn't that get you depressed, man?
Yeah, I mean, like you kind of get used to it in a sort of sense.
Man, sometimes there's something fun in the news that cheers you up, even if it's sinister for somebody. But that's my morbid, sinister, gallows newsroom sense of humor. So I don't know.
To each his own.
My brother's a physician. He's worse than I am. It's okay. We have some fun stories. My favorite story we're going to bury. We're going to not get to it for a little while because I just think it's so tantalizing. So I'll give you a hint. The story is sort of out of Fort Worth. It was reported out of Dallas. So there's your hint. Matthew's over here knowingly nodding his head because he knows what I'm talking about, but we'll see. But yeah, we'll have a little fun with that. First, there's a big story. There's a really big story. This is a large story. You see where I'm going with this?
I see where you're going. This may bridge us into the story.
I think you're right. That's a good point. Yes, so nicely done. We're talking about Chris Christie. And I'd like to say Chris Christie and Fort Lee, but now it's Chris Christie and Fort Lee and Hoboken and maybe federal investigators and Hillary Clinton. And this story is big, and I hate to go here. This story is big and growing. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. If you didn't follow it, first, you clearly haven't been following the news because it's all any of the cable networks talked about for about a week and a half now. But Chris Christie, aides on his staff, apparently were involved in fact, his chief of staff emailed the head of the always forget the name here, so forgive me, emailed the Port Authority chief, so David Wildstein. So Chris Christie's chief of staff emails David Wildstein at the Port Authority and says it's time for some traffic jams in Fort Lee, New Jersey. And he writes back, got it. And shortly after that, some lanes got closed and enormous traffic built up on the on this bridge, the George Washington Bridge, out of Fort Lee into New York, into the city. And the thinking is that this mayor, who, by the way, is a Democrat, the mayor of Fort Lee, did not support Governor Christie, who's a Republican, for governor, which should not be a surprise to a Republican candidate in a Democrat state. But there are suggestions that perhaps Christie did this as political payback in Fort Lee. I kind of shrug my shoulders and go, come on, it's Jersey.
This is Jersey.
I mean, it's funny the way you look at it, because the way I pictured it in my head, it's like one of those spy movies and all the James Bond music is going off and he sends this email and it's just like, we need to stop the bridges. And he's like, you got it. Presses a button. Everything just collapses. Something out of, I don't know, Casino Royale.
Actually,
something crazy.
Like, to me, it feels sort of like mob-esque kind of deal, because it's just like you just need to say one word and he's like, I'll take care of it, don't worry. It feels like Italian mob business right there.
Dr. K, you're speaking my language.
Sorry, I had to go there. We always like theme songs on the show. Yeah, it is, I don't know, it's potentially sinister, it's potentially problematic, even if, and this is an argument a lot of conservatives have used about Chicago politics, it's the Chicago way. You know, even if that's the way things are done and have been done for a century, since Tammany Hall in New York, New Jersey, Chicago, that doesn't mean you're going to get away with it if you're a nationally prominent politician. And 2016 presidential ambitions aside, remember this guy, Chris Christie, is head of the National Governors Conference. And now there's some calls from some Democrats for him to step down from that role as the head of the 50 governors. Is it 57 governors, I think the president said when he was campaigning? Do you guys remember that story? Mm. At one point, Senator then Obama in 2008 said the 57 states when he was campaigning. So sorry, oblique, obscure reference from 6 years ago.
Oh, wow. Sorry, you're always taking shots, Dr. K. Now, something interesting we were covering before the show came on, it's whether this guy, the person who apparently flipped the switch, was whether he took orders or whether he caused it on his own. So in other words, was this guy was he acting as an individual or was he a fall man? Was he somebody to take the blame when the blame needed to be casted? What do you guys think?
I honestly think it was someone to take the blame for, because it's just government has this way of being so intricate and so like having to use all these like secretive routes in order to like get a certain advantage against an opponent that it wouldn't be all that surprising if it was the fallout guy just having to take the hit for the team.
Yeah, and a couple possibilities. So Bill Baroni is the chief executive at the Port Authority. That's different from the chief administrator of the Port Authority. Bill Baroni is an appointee. He's a political person. And he said it was a traffic study. Now, that's funny to me because I've heard of traffic studies, but I don't remember them involving, let's do a field experiment where we close some lanes and see what happens.
Oh my gosh.
I thought a traffic study was you either went out and observed or, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, I've taken my basic science. I believe there's a control group and an uncontrolled group. If it was a scientific experiment, it was done rather poorly, but yeah, that's just me.
There was only an experimental group, and the experiment did not go well.
Now, I actually have a question for you, Dr. K. I'm curious to know, like, what are the people of New Jersey doing, like, for this? I mean, like, I'm sure this was a really big... like
there's that word again
a really big setback to some of the like family-owned businesses and stuff that had to actually use the bridge in order to distribute goods to both sides of the city.
It's a great argument, and in fact the delays ran upwards of 4 hours. There's a report that hasn't been confirmed that a woman died because she was unable to be reached by emergency vehicles while she was trapped in this ridiculous traffic. So there were some real consequences from the traffic slowdown, and so it was pretty brutal. And I still don't quite get why you close lanes to do a traffic study. Like, I get closing lanes to do construction. Lord knows we know that all around Texas, and they need more of that in Houston, if anything. But the roads are awful there. But anyway, it's fascinating to me that this happened. And here's the problem from Chris Christie's perspective. Even the perception of impropriety could be ruinously problematic.
Absolutely.
That could be enough.
I mean, the fact that somebody could nail him for such an atrocious thing, such a petty thing, which I believe that he is capable of it, but I mean, just to get nailed for it, it's just such a reputation ruiner. But I don't see this as potentially damaging him in another way, because it's the same reason no politician can truly be vacated from their office unless you have absolute certainty that he caused it. And it's simple. You can't pin him for this because, like we were talking about before, he has a fall guy. If you try to press him on the issue, he's merely going to be like, we had no connection with him whatsoever. This isn't going to stick. What do you think, Reggie?
I mean, like, that's true in the fact that you can't necessarily blame him specifically, but you also have to look at the fact that Christie has been known to just do some very out there things as a governor and very in your face. He's told people to shut up and swore at people like on national television. I'm like, how could you possibly do that? And you're trying to create a good image for yourself.
He's trying to create his Jersey image. He's trying
his
to make himself
Italian,
loud, possibly connected to the mafia. Who knows? He's just trying to perceive that image. So, well, Dr. K, while you stepped out, we were talking about how this could possibly affect Chris Christie's political career. And truly, I don't see this, and even if it is true, I don't see this as in any way affecting him, because they can't pin the guy for it. I simply don't see them pinning him for it.
I mean, I think the impression, I'll tell you what I think might happen, and this will be interesting. I think starting even in Republican primaries, people will go after him using this as a bludgeon.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And it could become that, you know, it's how we do things in Jersey, you know, and it's like, I could see somebody saying, we don't need some garment district politician up in D.C. We have enough of that inside baseball stuff up there. So, I don't know. I think it could hurt him. I think it will hurt him. It may not hurt him, and I'll go back to Mitt Romney's 47% comment, you know.
Nah.
Chris Christie could run tomorrow and probably get 42, 45% of the national vote just because Republicans are going to vote Republican and Democrats are going to vote Democrat, you know. And so in that sense, I don't think it could hurt him. But I do think, I think it will hurt his chances. I think it's going to be interesting to see. And there's going to be a push for some fresh faces.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we always, this may just propagate a new political change in the state of New Jersey, but we'll just have to see.
Well, let's have a little fun with this. In fact, John Stewart had a little fun with this, and he put it better than I could. So let's give a listen to John Stewart's take on the Christie scandal. Okay, you didn't get to hear that, but it was pretty darn funny. No, I'm kidding. We actually we had some technical.
What a riot that John Stewart.
I'm kidding. We actually will get to it because it's pretty funny, so we may play it another day. But yeah, he did have some fun at the expense of Governor Christie. And in fact, the funniest thing he said was, he said, you know, this doesn't punish the mayor of Fort Lee. He's the only guy who can't leave Fort Lee, New Jersey. So he's got to be stuck there. It was a great observation. You know, to make this big story bigger, and yes, I'm going to keep beating that horse. Sorry. Fort Lee is not the only city linked with Chris Christie and a scandal. And I know you've heard of this other city, Hoboken, New Jersey. I love that.
Jersey.
Hoboken. Hoboken.
So the Democrat mayor of Hoboken, in the wake of this scandal about Fort Lee, she popped up and said, hey, you know, way back when Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy struck here, and we were trying to recover from that, I got word from the lieutenant governor of the state that said, hey, you know, the governor really supports this mixed-use development that some buddies of his want to build, and it's going to put some money in their pockets. And he says, you need to support that development here in Hoboken, or you may not get Superstorm Sandy federal relief dollars. And the mayor thought, well, those dollars are too important. I'm just going to salute and take it. And I thought that was kind of interesting because the Christie, the lieutenant governor, Kim Guadagno, is saying, no, that's ridiculous. It's clearly not true. And the mayor is insisting it is true in Hoboken. And so it's a she said, but it's a second scandal possibly linked to sort of, frankly, bullying, for lack of a better word, from the Christie administration.
Wait, and this was caught live on camera and everything?
Clearly not. No, it was a private conversation that
I was about to say, like, that's a clear sign of a man threatening another man on television. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, except it was a female mayor, a female lieutenant governor.
I got you.
And just the Hoboken mayor, also a Democrat, is saying this is what happened. And so, again, there isn't evidence of it yet. But the U.S. Attorney's Office in Jersey is kind of interested, and they're taking a look at it. So somebody on Christie's staff may end up, if not in real, real trouble, at least getting in some political trouble and causing problems for the boss. But there may be some criminal investigations, which would be really interesting.
I'm telling you, all this just looks like classic movie mob cinema. Just typical, like, in-your-face attacking people, just like, but it's like behind the door, so it's just like, oh, we're gonna deal with this in our own way.
It's just business. We're doing business.
And we do it in New Jersey.
Exactly. And that's the other part of it. Like, if this happened in Indiana, it would be an enormous scandal. But you're like, come on, it's Jersey.
It's Jersey.
It's Jersey.
Yeah, I get it. All right, so we're going to come back, talk about some other issues. We're going to visit the Olympics briefly before the terrorists visit the Olympics. We'll talk about that and some other problems in, shall we say, Western Russia, Eastern Europe. And nothing bad ever happens there.
Right? Oh, nothing. Yeah. Not with Putin protecting me from everything.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm thinking 1914. Nothing bad ever happens in that part of the world. So,
oh, no.
All right. We'll come back and talk about that. And again, my favorite story that I'll tease, the Fort Worth-Dallas connection. There's an Austin connection, too. So you'll figure it out eventually. We're going to talk about that one coming up in a little bit. But we'll be back with you on The Devil's Advocate in a couple of minutes.
We may not get music.
In order to put songs in between?
We could, except we're live. So, yeah,
oh my
we
goodness.
Can't edit live. Good thing nobody listens to the show, though. That's the real payoff. So I always love that scene. And I'm a big fan of the movie Major League. Have you ever seen that? So he's like, you know, no runs, one hit. That's all we got. One bleep hit. And he goes, you can't say that on the radio. Don't worry. Nobody's listening anyway.
Oh, man. man.
I should record that and use it.
Dr. K, have you ever watched Anchorman with Ron Burgundy? Or the Ron Burgundy movie?
Ron Burgundy?
This is one scene. It's like he's smoking a cigar and he's like, "What? We're on air? I don't believe you. Just keep smoking."
Nicely done. Yeah, and Anchorman 2's out. I think my daughter and I are going to go see that. So.
I've heard great things about it. My brother thought it was as funny as the first one, and that's going to be hard to beat. I'm excited.
Well, it's too bad Jordan's not here because he would especially have fun with this. But I may do the rest of the program in my Anchorman voice. Except I yell at my students and beat them over the head and fail them on assignments when they do that on their broadcast journalism
stream. God, story, it's the beginning of the semester, Dr. K. You got to settle down.
No, don't you just love wait. That teacher?
Must be privilege. Done right. Exactly.
This is why nobody likes journalists. My goodness, they're so petty.
I thought it was they weren't getting paid. I can't believe I said that. Okay, sorry.
Gosh.
Yeah, look, I jumped the fence from the newsroom to academia. I saw the writing on the wall. But anyway,
hey, this is considered our break, so we can talk about anything between this.
Yeah, nobody's listening. Exactly. So let's move on around the world. So the Sochi Olympics are coming up very shortly, just a couple weeks away. And there are some problems with this. And so what's going on is already there have been some attacks. There's a main sort of transit way, a big city that people pass through to get to Sochi, which is in the southwest corner, basically. The Tajikistan, the Stan corner of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the area of the country where the Olympics are going to be. And already some radical Islamic terrorists have made some threats. They're threatening potential suicide bombers. There's fear that four women called the Black Widows, who are thought to be suicide bombers, may already be in the area of the Olympics. There have already been a couple of explosions in a city nearby through which most people will pass to get there. So there are real fears about the security. One U.S. senator told Americans they shouldn't bother going. And so I don't know. I mean, I think that's going to be really problematic.
I mean, if there is something, and I'm not even being facetious on this, if there is something that can possibly bring together President Obama and President Putin to the discussion table in a civilized manner, then you know it's a serious matter. I mean, they've both sat down. They've tried to work out security. I don't know if this is an outdated source, but it was believed that they're even going to have two U.S. destroyers off the coast to provide security. Of course, they're going to get the
and to be prepared in case of the need for an emergency evacuation.
Absolutely,
exactly.
And the athletes are going to be provided I believe the term was diplomatic security, you know, the type ambassadors get, which I don't know how effective it is considering that that has failed in the past, but we'll see what happens. But I mean, the fact that Putin is even allowing these measures shows that it is indeed quite a threat and that the Russians cannot deal with it in their own, especially with that region. That region has been in turmoil for thousands of years. I mean, that's not going to stop.
Now, can't they change the location of the Olympics?
It's impossible because they build venues and do all kinds of infrastructure for transit, traffic control, you know, the ice arenas, everything's built in that city, so it's impossible.
It would be quite frankly throwing out billions of dollars out the door. They can't possibly do it. They just have to do it and hope for the best.
It evokes fears to me of the 1972 Munich Games, the Summer Olympics.
When the Jewish team was captured?
Yeah, exactly. So nine Israeli athletes, coaches, their handlers were taken hostage by eight Palestinians. And there was a multi-day standoff, and that ended with all of the Israelis being killed. Every one of them got killed in that attack.
And that was in a more stable region. What was considered stable at the time? I mean, was it East Germany or West Germany?
That was Munich. So
that was
West Germany.
Yeah. Yes, it was in West Germany, which
wasn't even divided Berlin. You know?
Absolutely. And here we have a region which has been in conflict due to both political, religious, you name it, any sort of conflict in that region, and we're going to host an Olympic there. I mean, security is going to have to be tight. Hell, it may have to be even more than tight. I mean, this could possibly be one of the most dangerous Olympics I've heard in recent times.
Yeah, which is it's frightening, and the terroristic elements there, I shouldn't use that word so loosely, but there are some radical Islamic groups openly advocating for violence, openly threatening. A video popped up this week with two known terrorists threatening to, and they just basically vaguely threatened harm without giving anything away. But, you know, even if they're not in position to do anything about it, the video's unsettling. And I think one of their, and nobody's really talked about this in the media that I've seen, one of their targets may be going after the economics of the Olympics. They may be trying to drive down attendance and actually hurt Putin and Russia in that way.
That's
like, if this is seen as a bust and you take a bath on this economically, then we don't have to hurt anybody.
That's very interesting. In fact, that's almost as clandestine as it may be, that's actually a rather effective strategy.
Me or them? Oh, okay. Sorry. No, go ahead.
Both of y'all. No, but just looking at it from that perspective, an economic victory would be more probable, more damaging than just a publicity one. I mean, you can set off a large bomb, kill this may be rather crass of me. You can set off a large bomb and kill a bunch of civilians. It doesn't really do much. But if you truly want to impact the people there, you want to get the government to notice you as a terrorist. Or yes, I'm using that term lightly as well. If you want to get the people to really notice you, you threaten them economically, then you'll get some attention from the government. So it's really quite a level of strategy I haven't seen in organizations like this before.
Now, the other side of this coin, and I'm pretty sure Matthew will have an opinion on it, is if you want iron-fisted security, is there a better country to be in the world than Russia for that?
That's true.
There may be, but
I mean, Richie, go ahead before I go off.
I mean, like, Russia's been known in a lot of cases for their high maintenance security.
I mean, let me just put it to you like this, folks. I was my mother's from Colombia, and I visited several Colombian cities, and that's not even as secure as Russia is. Yet you will go there and you will see military men armed with machine guns at every checkpoint in Colombia. Now, Russia is essentially the same thing, except these men have advanced weaponry, the latest in AK technology at the time, and possibly elements of the KGB watching out for certain things. So it is just... A part of me wants to go to these Olympics just to witness, not the events, but the actual military output Russia is capable. You'll see the field and there'll be a tank driving across. I don't know. I'd be excited to see a T-34, but me being a facetious society, it would be quite a display, and I'd be curious to see Russia's military output in securing this location.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting because I suspect Putin, and some people forget, we'd like to remind them occasionally, he was the head of the KGB.
Of course, wasn't he?
Before he ran the country. So So this is a guy who's not going to take chances with this, and image be damned, you know, he'll do what he thinks he needs to do to take care of it. So,
Dr. K, speaking about old Soviet war technology, I think we should visit the Ukraine because something similar is occurring right there.
Well, and actually no one's been... Well, there have been a couple bombings in areas east of Doshi that killed some folks. But to the west, to the Ukraine, for the first time, there's been a long conflict underway over the last, half a year?
Yes, sir.
That people have not paid much attention to in this country. But for the first time today, protesters of the democratically elected government have been killed. They were shot and killed by police in a clash today in Kiev, in the capital. And so...
Was that at Independent Square?
Let me see if I can see where it was.
Because I've heard about the clashes in Independent Square. Over 100,000 people running out and having a face-off with military police, which have recently led to casualties. I didn't know it was the leadership which was killed in that day.
Yeah, I don't know if this was in Independence Square, but yeah, two protesters were shot to death, and I think it was in Independence Square. And in fact, the government authorized the use of water cannons. That's brutal enough already to disperse a crowd of 100,000 people, but this is Kiev in January, mm-hmm. and so it's below freezing, in some cases well below freezing, and they're blasting these people with water cannons.
We may joke about it here, but that temperature and being sprayed with lava, that could lead to hypothermia really quickly. For the viewers who are not aware of what's going on in the Ukraine, the problems that are occurring is attributed to a recent turn down of I believe it was an offer by the EU for Ukraine to become more involved in the European Union's actions, but they turned it down. And what the Ukrainian people viewed this as was sort of a strict adherence, you know, to that old Soviet satellite state policy. And a lot of the Ukrainian people are against that. They want to be more integrated with the EU and less integrated with Russia. So they took to the streets and started protesting. But in recent days, several people people have been killed. So it is this conflict has spiraled out of proportions with both sides. Even Ambassador Sergei Lavrov, one of my favorite people to talk about, has claimed that Russia will be willing to back the Ukraine on this. Of course, naturally, but it'll be interesting to see how this affects Ukraine's president, Viktor, who is under tremendous political pressure to possibly fix this.
Well, and this has been, you mentioned it's been escalating, and it has been escalating, and it's been escalating in two ways. It started December 1st, sort of an impromptu protest, and it's been growing since in Independence Square in the capital in Kiev. But protesters in recent days have taken over and set fire to police buses. There's a stadium there, Dynamo Stadium, where there have been numerous fires. Now, that may be related to the cold, but also protesters. So they've been ramping things up too, and they've been clashing with riot police in uniform. And once you get up into these enormous numbers and you get this kind of this tipping point, it really has an impact. And I think that's, and you know, we've seen it in Libya, we see the attempts in Syria, you know, we saw it with the Arab Spring in Egypt, and so it's fascinating to watch and see if it goes here. And I suspect there are folks in Eastern Europe and in Russia who are not at all interested in seeing this spread to their neck of the woods.
You know, that was a fascinating point that you brought up, especially with the Egypt and Syria examples, because in the Ukraine, while we typically don't associate Ukraine, we associate it more with the Russian side of Europe, Ukraine is still part of Russia and not part of a region which we'd consider very much in political destabilization. But these protesters, it seems to be taking less of a mob mentality, and it appears that they are getting organized rather quickly. In fact, to some degree, I believe that these protesters organized even more so quickly than some of the Egyptian riots. Because people forget that this accumulation in Egypt took a long time. Yet here we have in the Ukraine, a nation of Europe, we have a massive mobilization, a very organized mobilization of the mob. And it's just so impressive to see a part of the world we wouldn't normally associate with that sort of violence just mobilize and degrade like that. But
and it's really, and it's interesting you say that, it's a large organized opposition to the point where they've been having official talks with President Yanukovych, Viktor Yanukovych. And, you know, he's been having to sit down and talk with them, which he wouldn't have to do if it wasn't a large mobilized authoritarian force.
Absolutely not.
And the protesters have said, and some of the protest leaders have said, we're willing to risk our lives. We're willing to face bullets to do this because we feel a moral justice here. And so I think it's beyond his control now. It's now out of his hands. And so the latest talks wrapped up today, and they didn't, I don't know, it may well go to Putin's hands, but gosh, now he's going to have, I hate to put it this way, but a two-front war with Sochi and the Ukraine, you know? Now, again, he may be the one guy in the country who's up to it and, in fact, probably salivating over it, but but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
Sergei, we must go to Ukraine. No, President, we must not, Sergei. We go to Ukraine right now. Good luck.
It could happen. I don't know. So it's worth noting the protest leader, the leader of the opposition forces in the Ukraine, is a longtime boxer. And so he may
a Russian boxer.
He may be addled. He may also just be tough enough to not stop a fight. You
Dr.
know?
So, K, I gotta ask you, did he ask President did he go up to President Viktor and say, I must break you?
Exactly. With white hair looking down at him. Exactly right. So in bright red shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Love the Rocky reference. Let's try again to take a break, and we'll come back and talk about some other issues. We'll spread the wealth around a little bit and have some fun. Again, you're with the Devil's Advocate here on KTXT, the Raider, 88.1 in the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Devil's Advocate on KTXD. Now the topic. What was that? Doctor, what are you doing, man?
Well, over the break, I went skiing, and, you know, we got up to Colorado, and that...
You can't do that. I mean, how am I going to... Look,
oh, wait, I'm in Texas. Okay, I'm sorry.
Dr. K, you made Reggie just ran out the door. He's... God, Dr. K, why would you do that? We've scared him away. My goodness. Ignore that, folks. That was completely not what you thought it was. I'm not saying anything more. I'm a lawyer.
Yeah, he's lawyering up. It was a match, and this is radio, so you have no proof. That's the bit. That's the beauty of radio.
Here, I'll hold it up. I'll hold it up to the mic so
exactly.
You guys can see it.
Exactly. Yeah. Here you go. You'll hold nothing up to the microphone. Uh-huh. That's what we're showing you. So, let's see. What's next? We were going to talk about maybe back to some domestic politics because yeah, there's some other stuff happening actually right here in the neighborhood. So, kind of fun. The other big story that's in the news. You may have heard of this person. Do you remember who else is in the news?
I don't know. Democrats, Republicans, Wendy Davis?
It's a Democrat. Yeah, Wendy Davis. Yeah, Davis. Interesting last name because it really wasn't part of the narrative. If you guys haven't been following this week, it's really funny, actually. Wendy Davis, who was the poor single mom.
Tragic.
Yeah, brought up by her bootstraps, managed all by herself to get to Harvard Law School after an early divorce and left saddled with a child at an early age. She was only 19. She was living alone in a trailer. All of this was part of her narrative, and she managed to fight through it and all on her own as an independent woman, single mother, go through all of these travails and launch this successful career that has landed her in the state Senate representing Fort Worth, the famous filibuster in opposition to the abortion law that passed in the special session last summer, and now Democrat candidate for governor of Texas, except she left an important part out of the narrative.
Quite an important part.
Which is the second husband from whom she takes the name Davis.
Mr. Davis?
Yeah, to whom she was married, 13 years older than her, a very successful, prominent attorney in Fort Worth, who married her shortly after the first divorce, paid for her last 2 years at Texas Christian University, paid entirely for her Harvard Law education, cleaning some of the money out of his 401k retirement fund in his 30s to do that. And very shortly after he made the last payment on her Harvard Law degree, I'm not making any of this up, she filed for divorce and at her request gave him custody of the two children. One was her own daughter. The other was his daughter. And she asked for him to have custody, and he got custody of the two kids.
I mean, if you've ever heard of a more clear sucker story than this, I never thought I'd say poor Mr. Davis, but... Yeah, poor Mr. Davis. I mean, my goodness, that seemed to be a rather incriminating piece of evidence she left out of her biography. And
it's a multi-year, multi-dollar part of the sob story that got left out, so it's pretty remarkable. And I dare say there are a lot of one-issue voters in South Florida. We used to joke that we had one-issue Republicans. It was the Cubans who were for the embargo. There are a lot of organized labor folks who vote Democrat because they're in unions. I get it. I understand. I think there are a lot of pro-abortion rights voters who will not be swayed in the least by this issue because they're just going to be rabid Democrat supporters. But I think there probably are some moderate women in the state who are not going to be at all sympathetic to parts of this story.
I mean, I've never believed that your private life has much bearing on your political life. Now, I may be in the minority, and I may be wrong, but I've truly never compared leadership abilities to your private life. But in this situation, it clearly dictates that other individuals may not vote for him. We were talking beforehand about this, Dr. K, how we didn't think she was going to win beforehand. Now... You mentioned before, all chances of that are out the window.
Well, yeah, and I put it in a funny way. I said, yeah, she was going to lose by 18. Now she'll lose by 25.
My goodness.
I'm not sure it's going to make much difference. I could be wrong. There was a lot of national money flowing into this race. I suspect that's going to continue. She had an outstanding fundraising month and quarter, still behind Greg Abbott, but did very, very well, exceptionally well, historically well, mm-hmm. for a Democrat in the state. And
not
many
only
millions
that,
of
she had that. She had that outstanding image, which is so important
exactly.
to a politician. She was a blank slate. She was somebody who you couldn't touch. Now, she's somebody who is full of holes right now. That image, that will give her opponents plenty of ammunition. Yeah. This may affect her entire political career. I don't see this going well at all.
Well, she may be well-known and popular enough in Fort Worth in her district to keep that seat, but that's a state Senate seat.
Of course. And she's been there for some time.
And by the way, Jeff Davis, the husband, and I just, forgive me, I love the irony of not Jefferson Davis, but Jeff Davis, of course, the president of the Confederacy. There's a statue of him on the campus of the Evil Empire, that university across the state. So they still proudly have their prominent Jeff Davis statue and some other icons of the Confederacy on the campus at the University of Texas at Austin. But anyway, Jeff Davis was the second husband and was a very prominent attorney and active in politics in Fort Worth. And so he actually was the entry to her political career as well. And yet in 2005, promptly after Harvard, gone.
Jesus. I mean, it just seems like she drained him of absolutely everything. I mean, I don't mean to imply something that it isn't, but what it seems to be implying is she drained him of everything, left him with the kids, headed off for her own career. I mean, that's not the image you need as a human being, as a politician, whatsoever for anything. I mean, geez, this spells out a whole new look on her character, and I believe for the public, it spells a whole new look on her character as well.
Well, and she went, she did an interview with, was it for the Today Show, I think, did a feature story on her, national coverage again.
That's
she's
right,
got
yeah.
national prominence because of the filibuster and because of support from Democrats, because she's this, not lone, but an isolated pro-abortion rights voice in the reddest of red states here in Texas. And they did a feature where they took her out to the trailer. And she got out there and they shot some video, the trailer where she lived. Well, it turns out she lived in that trailer for a couple of months. It wasn't long at all. And her father introduced her to Jeff Davis.
That's right, a friend of her father.
Yeah, and ended up making that connection and, you know, sort of let her out of the trailer very quickly. She actually lived in a really nice neighborhood in Fort Worth while she was finishing TCU and going to Harvard. And, by the way, went away to Harvard alone for long, long stretches for months at a time while the husband raised the kids. Now, I've been in that situation. My wife's been in that situation. We've taken turns. So I get it, and we don't know all the details. Speaking of details, the one thing Wendy Davis has apologized for is one of the criticisms, and this article is in the Dallas Morning News. That's where it broke. Texas Tribune, some other outlets have picked up on it, of course. But the first article said one of the inconsistencies was Wendy Davis said became a single mother or single parent at age 19. One of the things people are harping on is the divorce wasn't final until age 21. I think that's a distinction with no meaning, because what I believe happened is she separated from the husband at 19, went off and lived with just her daughter, and the divorce wasn't final till 21, but for all intents and purposes, she was a single mother for those 2 years. So,
but that's
before Jeff Davis. Mm-hmm. That was the first husband.
I mean, that's just the process of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I tend to confuse those. I'm an international kid.
Yeah, that's okay. We understand. So, yeah, this is it's an interesting story. I do think it's going to hurt her standing, and it's kind of fun to. We didn't know we were going to do a whole show on political scandals this week, but thanks to both a prominent Republican and a prominent Democrat for providing fodder for our program. We appreciate that.
The devil's advocate is not nothing except being fair and insulting both sides equally.
Exactly. And if Greg Abbott or Hillary Clinton screwed up tomorrow, we'd be happy to jump on their case too. So it's fine.
International, yeah. Domestic, doesn't matter. We'll go out. After them.
Greg Abbott, to his credit, he's the Republican, I guess, heir apparent, not the official nominee yet, but the presumed Republican nominee for governor of Texas to follow Rick Perry. He has not touched this. In fact, he openly says, I'm not going to go there. You know, let's see how it plays out. You know, this is not the time or the place. And I thought
you mean
that was,
by he's not going to go there, as in he's not going to run this term, or
no. I mean, he's not going to go after Wendy Davis. He's not going to attack Wendy Davis over these issues. I think, you know, that sounds like altruism and a big heart, but that's actually the perspective of somebody who knows darn well he's sitting on a $5 million and 20-point electoral lead in the polls. And so there's no reason to unleash and hurt your image, you know? Why make Republican women mad at you by attacking a woman? He's just going to lay low and let it happen.
Absolutely. I mean, the damage that has already been done, he doesn't have to... In fact, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm curious how this news surfaced, though, because, I mean, if it was Greg Abbott's camp who actually discovered this, he would have had a hand to do with it. I'm actually curious now to hear where the source for this information came from, because if it was Greg Abbott who brought up some dirt on Wendy Davis, then that would imply that he had a hand in this.
Well, that's an interesting point, but it didn't come from the Davis campaign. The Dallas Morning News did some digging
enough
on their own, found some sources, looked at the record at Harvard Law, interviewed Jeff Davis, the second husband, got
fair
his
enough
perspective. So they had some maybe not neutral sources, but not necessarily partisan sources. But how did the Dallas Morning News get on this story last week?
Yeah.
I suspect somebody somewhere in a Republican office, probably in Dallas, put somebody onto it at the Morning News.
Probably, but that's pointless speculation. But I mean, we're the news, so we have to bring it up as speculation as usual.
Well, and there's more evidence to support Wendy Davis's, what's the best? She basically withheld information. I mean, that's all she did. She didn't exactly lie about anything. She just didn't tell. She selectively told the story. I'm certain is not the first politician to do that. So she, you know, that was her sin. And but there's more evidence supporting her omissions than there is so far linking Fort Lee or Hoboken to Governor Christie. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Also, I suspect Wendy Davis got a lot more attention from the national media around the time she announced than she's going to get from the national media over this, quote, scandal. I suspect they're going to hide from this at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see.
Bunker down, hope for the best, expect the worst, pray for the best sort of attitude.
Yeah, I guess. And again, I still think she's toast. It's just a matter of how well done your toast is in this race. So I don't think it's going to even be close. Let's take a break, and we're going to come back and do a little lightning round for you guys, have a little fun with some other issues, and we'll catch up with you in a couple minutes on The Devil's Advocate here on KTXT 88.1, The Raider.
Children.
Hey, welcome back to this Devil's Advocate on KTXT The Raider. Dr. K here coming to you live from the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University, joined by Matthew Riley from Political Science.
Yes, sir. And
I can't believe you even tried to quit thinking about politics over the break.
Well, funny you mentioned, Reggie still hasn't come back. I guess he's still afraid after you lighting up that match.
Yeah, he's as afraid as inmates on death row are in the state of Ohio. That's how afraid he is.
So. My goodness, and he has a right to be. Not Reggie, the inmate.
No, you know, and I'll save this for in a minute. But and I don't know where you'll fall on this issue. We may not agree or disagree, but we'll see. We're gonna have a little fun. Those little short lightning round we want to play with, just because a bunch of weird stories crossed our transom, and we wanted to get to some of them. The family of a death row inmate is complaining in Ohio after his execution didn't go so well. It took 25 minutes. He was gasping, flinching. The executioners in Ohio, because there has been a push to try to restrict access to a lot of the medications that these folks use to do lethal injection execution, they tried a different drug combination. And this was one of the first executions attempting this. And it took apparently about 25 minutes for this guy to expire. And he clearly showed signs of some discomfort. Now, before you feel too sorry for this guy, my first thought was, let me go look up what the heck his crime was, because he was on death row. And he had raped and killed a pregnant woman in her 20s to earn himself a spot on death row. I'm pretty sure his crime and his torture of that poor woman took longer than 25 minutes. Even if it didn't, I'm sorry, I have no sympathy at all for this guy. And my philosophy, Matthew may not know this, my philosophy on death penalty is line them up on bleachers and plug them in.
So. Hey, Dr. K, you're a Republican. I could have guessed it if you'd given me the time. Now, you mentioned that you think I might disagree. The way I look at it is this. I mean, the man died. The man, from what you've told me, was in clear discomfort in his situation. I mean, once you've committed such a heinous crime, which is, you know, raping a pregnant woman, which is just beyond heinous.
Joy Stewart, 22 years old.
Yes, sir. I mean, once you've done that, I believe you have lost all protection from the law whatsoever. There's that old saying is you should not be prepared to shoot a gun unless you're prepared to be shot at. And I believe this individual lost all of his rights. Now, I also don't want it to sound like I'm being arbitrary. Criminals, no matter how heinous their crime, deserve some measure of sympathy when it comes to that. So they should be allowed the basics. But the fact that it took him 25 minutes and he was discomfort, I don't view that as I'm not flocking in his defense. I can't possibly be flocking in his defense. Like, good God, this man had rights. How dare they do that? I'm sure there are people who would, but I don't believe that personally. However, I don't want to be too arbitrary and say that, you know, this should be the case every time. But,
well,
yeah.
And he had a trial by jury of his peers, multiple appeals. The crime was in 1989.
Jeez.
So, you know, no sympathy. I'm sorry at all for this guy. Okay, next issue, much cheerier. Census Bureau data came out and it found this interesting trend. People who... Well, let's see. Should I say people who live in? Because they don't anymore. People are leaving states with lots and lots of government, and they're moving to states with very little government. So folks are relocating, for example, from Jersey to Texas. Not that we want them here, but I'm just saying, you know, that's what's
they're
going
coming
on, so.
In. They're going in. They're crossing bridges to get here.
I'm not at all surprised, and I don't know that citizens think much about tax policy. Although, if you're moving to a place like Florida or Texas with no state income tax from a place like New York or California with a high state income tax, that may entirely be part of your motivation to relocate. But I think there's a lot of nuance here, and we talked about it a little bit earlier in the break about how, for example, some of the high government states might be places like Michigan that need high government just for subsistence because, you know, there really aren't too many private opportunities for citizens there. And so it's possible it's a misnomer. How did you phrase it earlier?
Absolutely. The way I phrased it earlier was, it's a quote that my statistics teacher taught me. It was correlation does not equal causation. What that means for you folks is just because all right, let me give you all an example. Imagine that there's a state where there is high crime, and in the same state, ice cream prices are also high. You don't usually equate high ice cream prices to high crime rates. So I sort of look at it, what this compares to this example is just because areas with
Loka. Somehow
Loka.
Thinking of a sinister DQ. So, I don't know. You just ruined dessert for me.
I'm sorry.
But no, it's a great example.
I'm sure. So just in this example, areas with low government to high government state, that doesn't necessarily equal that. There may be a number of causes which may be causing this. We're just not sure. I'd have to look at those numbers. I enjoy looking at statistics personally.
I do too, but I get paid for it. But it's interesting because you're seeing growth in some states where people weren't expecting it, and some places where it's been a long time trend, especially Texas has benefited mightily. And in fact, Texas is closing on New York to be the second most populous state in the country, which is interesting.
Goodness.
I hope it's not because all the New Yorkers are moving to Texas.
With the New Jerseyers.
Exactly.
And every single one of them.
Okay, so let me move on. One more issue. Matthew, did you see The Life of Pi, Ang Lee's movie? Probably not.
Dr. K, you know I did.
Yeah, so very popular film. Came out a couple of years ago. It's a really prominent scene on in this movie, if you haven't seen it. There's a scene where a boy is adrift at sea, basically in a dinghy, in a lifeboat. And there are a variety of animals on there, including a tiger. There's a Bengal tiger on the boat. That Bengal tiger almost drowned during the filming of that movie, and it was a big secret. A number of horses have been killed in movie productions. Some animals died during The Hobbit filming. Sheep, goats, from dehydration, from exhaustion, from drowning. Animals are really getting badly abused in Hollywood in filmmaking, which shocks a lot of people because it's supposed to be this mecca of animal rights.
Well, I mean, that was back when the...
Come on, you're for dead animals. You know you are. You said earlier.
Come on.
This is why I miss... Every so often, Anthony Hall would take that extraordinarily extreme offensive position just for shock value, and it was kind of fun. So.
I never...
Kill the horses, you know. Like,
just for the shock value. But, I mean... Didn't Hollywood already cover this issue? I mean, it seems like it was back in the day. It wasn't even a couple years ago when Hollywood was getting lambasted for abusing animals. I mean, it feels like we went through that era, sort of disappeared for a while, and now we're back right at it. It feels like nothing has changed. It feels like PETA hasn't made any bit of difference.
Well, in any progress. And the irony to me is L.A. is the mecca of animal rights. So we're going to leave you with a little fun here. Back to back, we want to leave you with Jon Stewart, followed by, was it on Jimmy Fallon Show? Yeah, Jimmy Fallon Show. Some humor aimed at Chris Christie this week. Give it a listen.
But of course, as we do every night, let's get right to your traffic on the ones. If you're coming into New York City on the George Washington Bridge, and it's last September, you may have noticed that the traffic congestion has shifted from its normal hellish congestion to a sort of soul-crushing vortex of exhaust and honking where you and your vehicle merge into one stationary, impotent amalgam of steel, fumes, and broken dreams. And an easy pass. Now, you may have thought to yourself, in September, at this bridge, as you sat unmoving for hours, is Godzilla on the other side of this bridge, destroying the town? And if so, could I take the lower level of the bridge? Anyway, the traffic on the Fort Lee side of that bridge was so unusual that it had to be looked into.
The allegation is that this was in retaliation by the Christie administration because the mayor of Fort Lee did not endorse Governor Chris Christie.
That is the most asinine. Christie had a 24-point lead over his reelection opponent, Democrat, who knows, Barbara Buono. The idea, Christie was so mad at this one mayor for not endorsing him, he's going to block the whole town's bridge access. You would have to be the world's most petty, spiteful person. And number two, by the way, backing up bridge traffic doesn't punish Fort Lee's mayor. It punishes people trying to get the out of Fort Lee. The mayor, he's the one guy who has to stay there.
In the day we sweat it out on the streets, stuck in traffic on the GWB. They shut down the toll booths of glory, 'cause we didn't endorse Christie. Sprung from cages on highway, now we got three lanes. Get your ass in line. Oh, maybe
Democrats, we gotta get out, but we can't. We're stuck in Governor Chris Christie's Fort Lee, New Jersey traffic jam. Governor, let me in, I wanna be your friend. There'll be no partisan divisions. Let me wrap my legs round your mighty rims and relieve your stressful condition. You got Wall Street masters stuck cheek to cheek with blue collar truckers, and man, I really gotta take a leak. But I can't, I'm stuck in Governor Chris Christie's Fort Lee, New Jersey traffic jam.
Okay, so, and that started out as Jimmy Fallon, but was actually Bruce Springsteen on the Jimmy Fallon show singing that little song. So it was pretty fun. But glad we got to share that with you, because Jon Stewart and Jimmy Fallon and Bruce Springsteen, in this case, are all funnier than we are. So it worked out nicely, but we had a good time with it. By the way, Bruce Springsteen apparently had a conversation last year with Chris Christie around the Hurricane Sandy relief effort. Christie gets a call, and Springsteen gets put on the phone and said, and you know, Christie's a huge fan apparently of Bruce Springsteen, has been to numerous concerts and stuff. And so I think this is kind of Springsteen throwing him under the bus. By the way, that phone call, Springsteen called from Air Force One. He was traveling with the president after the Superstorm Sandy.
My
so
goodness.
Anyway, welcome back to the spring season of The Devil's Advocate. We'll be back next Wednesday at 5 with the crew, and we're happy you were able to join us. We'll catch up with you guys next week.